From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Hayward.
Richmond.
San Pablo.
Yeah, San Pablo.
I live in Novato.
Emeryville.
Rockridge.
I live in Berkeley.
Coming up, we'll visit West Oakland, a neighborhood renowned for its murals, but plagued by dumped garbage.
There's always couches and mattresses and stuff being dumped. It's frustrating. We're trying to make it better.
Then we'll meet a high school student from Fremont being honored as one of the nation's top environmentalists.
I really want to empower the young people to show them that, you know, this is their future, this is their world, and they can do something about it.
And we'll get a first-time lesson in bike riding without the training wheels.
Very good job. Wow. First day biking. First day biking.
Here we go. It's Cross Currents. Stay with us. Tossing trash illegally has become a big problem in Oakland, so much so that last year the city upgraded illegal dumping from a citation to a misdemeanor. It also hiked up the fine for offenders up to $1,000 a day. City officials in hot spots like East and West Oakland have hosted trash amnesty days where Oaklanders can drop off anything in a dumpster free of charge. But some city officials say that's actually made the problem worse by attracting too many items too fast. KALW's Todd Whitney spent some time exploring the issue with Oakland residents and city officials.
I'm at the corner of 5th and Adeline in West Oakland, right under the bar tracks. This is one of the city's illegal dumping hotspots.
As you see, like shoving cars, debris, house of debris, doors, mattresses, everything. Even TVs.
That's Bassam Al-Mahada. He's the leader of the public works crew responsible for cleaning up today's mess.
The legal dumping is actually all over, not only this spot. It's even the neighborhoods. People, they just throw their stuff outside. They call the city daily, every day. Even if you drive through the neighborhood, you see a lot of people, they don't even care about it. They just throw their stuff outside.
And the most common item found?
And mattresses. Mattresses actually is the highest number. The mattresses, a lot of people, they just throw them all over.
Mattresses? Well, what's up with all the mattresses? It's because they're big, they're bulky, and they're really difficult to toss in a trash can.
In West Oakland, we got about 30 complaints for today. East Oakland is about 45 complaints, mattresses only.
You see, illegal dumping is a problem throughout the Bay Area, but something Oakland struggles with more than other cities. And there are reasons for that. One of them is Oakland's geography. The city sits at a crossroads in the East Bay where a lot of freeways intersect. And that's the perfect spot for anyone, especially out-of-towners, to do their dirty work and dump debris. Another reason is Oakland's contract with Waste Management. That's the city's garbage collector. Right now, that contract says if you live in a single-family home or an apartment building with a couple units, you only get one free bulky pickup per year. Bulky items are stuff like mattresses, furniture, sofas, big stuff like that. But if you rent in a place with five or more units, then you're out of luck.
Because we have to be able to manage it. We have to be able to make sure that what's being put out on the curb is something that we actually can collect.
That's David Tucker. He's the Director of Government and Community Relations for Waste Management. He says the problem with apartment complexes is that if everybody puts out their big items at the same time, that sort of scenario could cause more problems than it actually solves.
We want to make sure, again, that when we do a bulky service, that it does not add more illegal dumping, because once a pile's out there, and if it's not done correctly, you will have somebody who's driving by and saying, hey, oh, there's a pile. Let me go dump my stuff. And it just becomes a much bigger, larger problem. And that's what we're trying to avoid.
If you do live in a multifamily building, you can drop your old mattresses and other big items at Waste Management's Davis Street Transfer Station. But that's going to cost you. This sort of scenario has been less than ideal for a lot of Oaklanders, but the policy is set to change. Starting July 1st, 2015, renters can work with their landlords to schedule bulky item pickups. But Tucker says a new garbage contract isn't the only solution.
We'll work with the Public Works Department. We can work with the city council members' offices. Noel Guile, he does a weekend cleanup every weekend.
Oakland City Council member Noel Guile reps East Oakland's Fruitvale neighborhood, and that's where we're headed right now.
Now, this here is the San Leandro Boulevard that leads into the Coliseum.
to watch the A's play. And see, there's already a pile over there. Look at this over here on the side. Look, this is all BART property, man. Welcome to Oakland, California.
Gail says another solution to the problem is to catch dumpers and prosecute them.
The thing about it, we have people on video and footage of people dumping.
If you get them on tape, why are they not prosecuted?
Because one is not a priority. It takes 8 months to a year. But look, man, this is an ongoing every... I'll clean this today. I'll come back tomorrow. It's just like that. Let me unload all these.
The city's working on a solution that offers a reward if you report illegal dumping and the dumper is successfully prosecuted.
And so if I get fined $6,000 by the fact you turn me in, you'll get $3,000 to create an incentive for the neighbors to, you know, to report it. And right now, nobody reports it. And those that do report it get frustrated because nothing gets done. And so we want to create a reward system. We want to create a penalty system and make it very clear that if we catch you in Oakland doing that, you will be penalized, fined. Otherwise, it's going to continue.
But if a new garbage contract, steep fines, and penalties won't stop illegal dumping, then what will? Maybe it's got to be a change in how Oaklanders think about the trash they dump. Every Saturday, Gaio organizes individuals and businesses in his district to dedicate a few hours to picking up trash. They ride around in pickup trucks, gathering things like couches, headboards, and, yep, mattresses. East Oaklanders have come to expect Gaio and his crew on Saturdays. So when they see him around their neighborhood, they come up and tell him about something that was recently dumped.
How you doing, man?
Hey. No, nobody.
Huh?
It comes from back here.
That's Glenn Anderson.
Yeah, everybody.
He lives in Fruitvale.
God, a lot of man. They think because the city will pick it up that it's okay to dump it out here. You know, and if the city stopped the landlords from dumping the stuff out here, you know, it would get done. It would get solved.
Illegal dumping's gotten so bad that people are putting up makeshift signs asking others to not dump trash near their residences. Gaio says Oakland dedicates $6 million a year to deal with illegal dumping. But the financial aspect misses the psychological impact of what's happening. Most of the dumping happens in East and West Oakland, parts of the city that are already dealing with other sets of problems. Oakland's Public Works Department officials told me it's part of the broken windows theory. That is, the more dilapidation and trash and bulky items that are dumped on the street, the more likely that street is to attract crime.
On the opposite side of the BART station, there's always couches and mattresses and stuff being dumped.
That's Amber Brown. She drives a bus that stops in MacArthur BART.
It's disheartening because they're remodeling the MacArthur BART. They put a parking garage, they're going to put housing and shops, and it's already tagged. There's stuff dumped everywhere, and it's frustrating. We're trying to make it better.
Next summer, all Oakland renters are going to get their chance for a free bulky item pickup. And there's been movement on the state level to address the problem as well. A law passed last year that's going to force mattress manufacturers to provide mattress recycling services to cities for free. But that doesn't start until 2016. Until then, get comfy with the sight of mattresses around Oakland. For Cross Currents, I'm Todd Whitney.
What ideas do you have to curb illegal dumping? Give us a call and share your thoughts at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. While litter is a tough problem to contain in Oakland, you don't have to head far to find some good environmental news. Down south in Fremont, a high schooler is being honored tonight as one of the nation's top environmentalists. The student is Linnea Shuck, and her work has taken place at a wildlife refuge along the bay. Chuck created a junior ranger program at the Don Edwards San Francisco Bay National Wildlife Refuge in Alviso, and she's made a how-to guide on how to help the country's 554 other wildlife refuges start their own. Tonight, Chuck and five others will receive the Brower Youth Award from the Earth Island Institute, an award named after David Brower, an environmentalist who helped create the Point Reyes National Seashore and other nature preserves around the state and the country. But first, Linnea Chuck joined KALW's Ben Trefney in studio.
What is the work that you have done that got you this honor?
So I'm the founder and creator of a program called the Junior Refuge Ranger program, where kids can come to the Don Edwards San Francisco Bay National Wildlife Refuge and learn all about what we do, why we're here, and also some really important environmental concepts. They go on habitat hikes, birding expeditions, they do lab activities, and they have a lot of fun. And after each activity, they earn a wildlife collector's card, which features one of the animals that we have on the refuge and has some really cool facts on the back, and they really like that.
So we're sitting in a studio right now, and it's kind of, you know, gray and boring looking, but what does it look like and feel like to be out there on the refuge?
So when you step out on the refuge, it's like going into another world. It's so awesome. There's marshland as far as you can see, pools that are colored with deep reds, emerald greens, and that's the marsh. And you're seeing hundreds of pelicans, and we have hundreds of white pelicans that nest on a certain island at our refuge. And, you know, you walk down the trail a little farther, and you see a beautiful slough with tule and all these types of waterfowl. It's an amazing place, and I would suggest that everyone go and visit a wildlife refuge. There's one within an hour's drive of nearly every major city.
So when kids take part in the program that you designed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What do they do? Like, kids show up? How many kids show up, and what happens?
So there's a lot of different ways that the program works. One is the sort of traditional manner where kids can come to the refuge and they pick up an activity adventure guide and they go and complete all the different activities.
Is that a little pamphlet or something? They have a pencil?
Exactly. And they get to do stuff like interview rangers. It has a little bird guide where they can go outside and try to compare and find the different types of birds. And so that's one part of it. And they can do it on their own. Or we also offer group junior refuge ranger programs where kids, about 15 kids or so, come for each session, and we all do group activities together. And we have a lot of interactive models that they get to work with. They get to do lab experiments and a lot of group collaborative activities that model what's happening on a larger scale in our environment. So that next session for that is going to be November 1st.
So this seems like it's really interactive. Did they have programs like this before you got involved?
They have a lot of programs for kids, but this is the program that is really, I'm hoping to connect all of the different refuges in the United States. That's my vision, so that kids can go to every single refuge and be a junior refuge ranger at all those refuges, learning why that specific refuge, you know, what it's there to protect, and what they can do about it.
How many are there?
There are over 560 refuges in the United States.
How many have you been to?
I have been to 3.
What are they like?
Each one is different, unique, and absolutely amazing. I went up to San Pablo the other day, and it is just gorgeous. The bay, you can go right up to the shore, and each one has its unique habitats. Lots of different ones have different endangered species that they're protecting. And specifically here in the Bay Area, we're located along something called the Pacific Flyway, which I described to the kids as like a highway for birds, and we're the rest stop on the highway. So on the Verge trip all the way from Alaska down to Mexico, we're right in the middle. So the birds stop here, they rest and recharge. So we have millions of birds coming through our refuge every single day.
So it seems like quite an ambitious goal to replicate what you did at the Don Edwards Wildlife Refuge, mm-hmm. which in and of itself is a pretty big thing for a teenager to do. But then you're looking at spreading that to over 500 other refuges. What makes you think that you could do that on such a scale? Because I think for a lot of people, that would seem intimidating.
It is definitely possible. I've created a how-to kit with a manual that basically all refuges have to do is drop in their own information, and they can create their own junior refuge ranger program. We've already had 9 refuges requesting our materials, so it's definitely spreading, and it's going to happen.
That's Linnea Shuck speaking with KALW's Ben Trefney. Shuck is a senior at Mission San Jose High School in Fremont, and she's being honored tonight as one of the nation's top young environmentalists by the Earth Island Institute. For more information about her work and the award, go to KALW.org and click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. You don't have to be an organizer like Linnea Shuck to play a role in protecting your environment. There are simple things we can all do to help out, like recycling, conserving energy, riding a bike. San Francisco is very much a biking city. There are bike lanes all over, and the number of riders increases annually. In fact, there's been a nearly 100% increase in cycling between 2006 and 2013. Every weekday, well over 8,000 men, women, and children are pedaling around town. As with any mode of transport, cycling requires some basic training. There are the classic training wheels. That's what many of us remember as children. But as KALW's Stephen Short tells us, some kids are using a new technique, balance bikes.
Valencia Street in San Francisco always seems to be busy, and that's certainly true on this Sunday afternoon, despite the fact that there are no cars on the road. They've been replaced by bicyclists, roller skaters, couples walking hand in hand, and other pedestrians, including Ryan Schmidt and his family from Bernal Heights.
They've closed the street down for the day, and it's part of a Sunday Streets program that's gone on for a few years. But it's the first time we've been here, so we're bringing the kids out to see what's here.
He acknowledges that closing a major street complicates traffic flow, but
on a day like today, you can't really complain about just an excuse to take a walk, and it's nice and flat.
And that's the idea, according to Liza Pratt, who is with Sunday Streets.
Sunday Streets is a car-free event where we encourage people to get outside, be active, exercise, kind of reimagine the streets as a different kind of public space, not just for moving vehicles, but also for people to enjoy.
There are moving vehicles here today, lots of them, but they're not motorized. And one of them is coming right down the middle of the street directly towards me. The driver is wearing an orange helmet and an off-white T-shirt with an illustration of Darth Vader. Darth Vader riding a bicycle. Let's see if I can intercept him.
Do you ride down the middle of the street when you're at home?
No, not necessarily.
That's good. How old are you?
6.
Remy Sauter of Albany isn't exactly sure when he started riding bikes.
Since I was 4. Since I was 5, actually.
Remy's mother, Beth Sauter, says he almost never used training wheels.
We started with the balance bikes.
Perhaps you've seen preschoolers scooting around on those little bikes without pedals. They're called balance bikes because advocates contend that once you learn to balance, pedaling comes naturally.
We saw a lot of people doing it, and it just looked to me to be more, first of all, more fun for the kid and more, you know, more sort of natural in that they got to learn the balancing.
There's actually a training wheels versus balance bike debate in some families, but not in this household.
You know, if someone had given us a pedal bike with training wheels, we would have been on that too.
As I say goodbye to Beth and Remy Sauter, I notice the open tent of the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. A lesson is just beginning.
So, Mayel, you're going to sit on this. You're going to put your butt on there, okay? Good. Whoa. Can we do it?
This lesson Freedom from Training Wheels focuses on learning to balance, the method Remy used. Margaret McCarthy is program director for the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. She's explaining the concept to Sunnyside resident Hillary Ronan. Her daughter, Mayel Ugarte, is here for her very first bicycle experience. The coalition prefers this balance method because
training wheels will teach you how to pedal, but they don't teach you how to balance. And actually, balancing is the hardest part to learn.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Oh,
so this is the best way to learn to ride a bike.
Definitely. Okay. It's much easier.
Mayama's trying, but she needs encouragement. Lots of it. And she's getting it.
All right. Now let's try to do it and keep sitting down. Yeah?
Okay.
All right. So sit down.
Keep sitting down
and then push with your feet. Push with your feet, okay?
Remember Remy, the boy with the Darth Vader shirt? His mother says he started riding a balance bike when he was 3. Mayel here will probably be able to say the same, long before she gets to be that old. She's only 21 months at the moment. And she does seem to be getting the hang of it.
Yeah, all right. She wants to do it again.
Yes, she does.
Put your hands on the handles.
She's so ready.
The San Francisco Bicycle Coalition website makes reference to the argument about which is better, training wheels or balance bikes. But the parents here seem to agree that the best method is the one that's right for their child. Because however they learn to bike, it will get them up and moving, something both sides agree will have a positive result.
Very good job. Wow. First day biking.
At the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition tent, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
The San Francisco Bike Coalition offers lessons to riders of all ages. Find more information at kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Now it's time for your stories. This is San Francisco StoryCorps. Before Lori Bruckner adopted Kate, she knew her only as a blown-up photocopied photograph. On the photograph was a Chinese name, Yu Mingren. Anxiously, Lori traveled all the way to Jiangsu in China to adopt her. Soon, Mingren became Kate. 15 years later, Kate sat down with her mom in the San Francisco StoryCorps booth to ask her what it was like when she saw Kate for the first time.
The first time I saw you was on a tiny little picture from an adoption agency. It was about like 2 inches wide by an inch tall. I remember my friend Kenny, he scanned the photo and he sent it all over the United States to different people, like to your grandparents and to Aunt Sarah and Uncle Paul and Terry and Greg and everybody who could possibly, I'd want to show that picture, I sent it to. And I remember the next time I saw you was in China. This nanny brought you through the door and you were bundled up. You had all these clothes on. Your face was really red and it looked kind of flushed. And at the time, I didn't realize how scared you probably were. I just was feeling pretty selfish about how happy I was. I remember, you know, I was told I shouldn't be looking you in the eye when I first met you. And because they said that, the adoption agency said that maybe that some adopted babies weren't used to having eye contact, but obviously you were, because you just stared right at me. And I think I fell in love with you, although I didn't know what to do with you yet, because I didn't know what to do as a mom. But I saw you and I just fell in love with you the minute I saw you. I sort of thought about your birth mother, but she didn't seem real to me till I was holding you in my arms and I realized that I was so happy, but it was kind of sad too, because she would not hold you in her arms. And I felt also sad for you that you wouldn't feel her hold you in her arms. So that was super happy, but at the same time, pretty sad. And another more less esoteric thing is that Kate actually sounds like me on the phone. When people call us, they always go, "Hello, Lori," and you'll go, "No, it's Kate," which is really kind of funny because we're not biologically related, but we sound alike, don't we?
People say.
All the time. I think we do.
Lori Bruckner spoke to her daughter, Kate, at the San Francisco StoryCorps booth. Find out how you can share your story at kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Jeremy Dalmas, Leela Day, Jack Detch, Sundia Dirks, Rachel Dornhelm, Marcy Fraser, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Alexis Luna Torres, Ted Muldoon, and Stephen Short. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. The line producer was Audrey Dilling. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Our managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And you are a big part of our show, and we love hearing from you. So email us at news@kalw.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Because of you, we can proudly say we are listener-supported public radio. This is the Oakland band Lumerians. You can catch them live at the New Parish in Oakland this Friday night. Details are at kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.